Hey, Prime members, you can listen to Men in Blazers ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the app today. Whether it's a midweek game on the continent or a big weekend clash, cash in with your soccer knowledge on Prize Picks, America's number one fantasy sports app. Download the app today. Use code MIB for a first deposit match of up to $100. This episode is supported by FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League Two after 15 long seasons of exile in the National League. Dedicated staff and passionate supporters celebrate the city's return to glory, the big time, all while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in that higher league. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenge and rise again into League One's promised land? FX's Welcome to Wrexham premieres May 2nd on FX. Stream on Hulu. You're listening to the Men in Blazers Media Network. Suboptimal Radio.
The gaffer's just said that he's going to put some beers on the coach in the plane.
From the Men in Blazers studios in the crap part of Bedford, New York, and the crap part of Miami Beach, Florida, it's the Men in Blazers podcast.
We back! Like the NWSL, Davo. How are you holding up? You got a nasty case of March Madness fever?
Oh, my word. Who isn't behind St. Peter's, Rog? I love this. I love this story.
It's Doug Edert's world, and we were all just living in it all this time. We'll admit, difficult weekend for me. Won't be clear up top watching Everton get pulverised in the FA Cup. Then evening, Auburn men's basketball get absolutely confused, shocked and dropped by Miami. Really, the highlight of March Madness for me has been watching Antonio Conte in the commercial for Powerade that pops up only about 27 times every ad break. Did we know, Davo, that Antonio Conte was such a master of physical comedy?
Well, he clearly knew himself. He understands what he can do. He's got a power. He's got a weapon.
Antonio Conte has a weapon. That is the first line of an incredible novel that would have me engrossed for the off. But you know, if you've not seen it, dear listeners, I don't know how you've missed it, because it does play about 14 times every commercial break. Antonio Conte is giving what looks like a halftime team talk to a team in blue, bit of a mystery, in which he, the man, remember, who banned ketchup from the Spurs canteen with a ruthless first move upon arriving at Tottenham Hotspur, is grasping an oversized sugar-filled Powerade quite happily. And his players are befuddled. I'm not sure what's going on in the game. But I'm sure Antonio Conte didn't have to be a method actor to be used to that halftime feeling. And Conte just assures them this with beautiful delivery. He says, "The secret to winning is to pause." Those are his words. The secret to winning is to pause. If you haven't seen it, it's up on our Instagram. At which point, the camera shot goes wide on him and he's still grasping aforementioned Powerade. But we see that our protagonist, Antonio Conte, is actually sitting in a giant lazy boy in the locker room. Cue close-up of Conte's hand. Clearly not his real hand, as there's neither blood in the fingernails nor nicotine stains on it. And he releases the lazy boy into reclining position. Davo, I have so many questions. Do you understand how this could have happened?
I think irony. This is not the Antonio Conte that any football fan knows or understands.
Yeah, I mean, first up, basic question. Who knew? Did you know, when you watch him, Antonio Conte was such a master of slapstick comedy, the hardest of all comic forms to master?
Well, and also, he's a man who takes direction, which I never would have believed that he would be a man who took direction.
Yes, yes, yes. And second, how much do you think Powerade had to pay Antonio Conte to publicly go against his core values? His core values are work harder. 2, grind yourself into a pulp in the name of victory. 3, I sleep when I'm dead. How much would you have to pay him to, on television, to say, the secret to winning is to pause? I mean, Harry Winks would never.
Yeah, I think you have to pay him whatever Powerade paid him to do the ad. That's the answer.
It's like having Jurgen Klopp on a commercial say, hugs are for losers. I mean, it makes just no sense at all. And finally, here's the big one. I need you to explain to me. Which marketing executive thought America? What would put Powerade over the top? Antonio Conte to be a spokesperson in a March Madness commercial. How many Americans even know who he is? Or do you think most people just think it's the guy from No Country for Old Men's scarier older brother?
I don't think they probably don't realize he's famous, but it's like Limu, Emu and Doug, Rog. You don't need to be famous. You just need to be a character. And Antonio Conte is definitely a character. And I'll tell you this. Yesterday, after playing tennis in 110 degree Miami heat and humidity,
Harry Winks would never.
What did I order right after the game? A Powerade. I've not drunk a Powerade, I think, ever. So it's worked on me.
Oh my God. Missed opportunity, though, to not get Conte to say, what's the most you ever lost on a coin toss, friendo? Thank you, Powerade. And if you are listening to this podcast, and I know you do, Powerade, you're a big GFOP, please, 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 by the time the Sweet 16 rolls around, get Sean Dyche in a commercial.
Okay, Rog, before we get to the football, it's a massive week here at the MIB Cube Farm as we gear up for the big one, Mexico versus the US men's national team on Thursday at the Azteca.
Eagle screech!
Coverage kicks off. I hope we got some baby eagles left, Rog. Our coverage kicks off tomorrow as we go behind enemy lines in your conversation with Ozark star and massive El Tri fan, Alfonso Herrera. Javi is proper football, Rog. And in this pod special presented by the GFOPs at Camarena, we talk how the baby eagles are perceived south of the border and the intimidation factor of the vaunted Azteca. And then Wednesday at noon Eastern, the day before the game, it's a very special Spotify Green Room in which you'll be joined by US men's national team alumnus and host of ESPN Plus's Football America's Hercules Gomez. And Thursday, game day, you're doing a live pregame around 9 p.m. Eastern time in the lead up. And we'll both be on live at the final whistle to break it all down. What a week, Rog.
Yes, I am particularly excited about Wednesday, noon Eastern, the Green Room with Herc. Oh, Hercules Gomez. I've always admired him as a player and the journey which he experienced. And he's become one of the most nuanced and thoughtful analysts in our region. One I really enjoy listening to the most. Ahead of our baby eagles descent into Fortress Azteca, to be able to talk to him candidly about this incredible moment in the US men's national team journey. Well, I can think of a few things finer. Join us live, GFOPs, and let's ask the hardest questions we can.
Is it a descent? Is it an ascent? Maybe Hercules will answer that question.
That's the only question we're going to discuss.
he's certainly honest and forthright in all of his comments about the US. I love him, Rog. Okay, before we pop the cork on this Premier League FA Cup blend of a weekend, can we get a toast, Rogelio?
Why, yes, we can. And I thought you would never ask. Let me open this. Oh, I want a raise. Let me have a sip. This third first bud of the day to Xavi. For the transformation that little ripped jean wonder of a manager has effected at Barcelona, who yesterday ended a run of 5 Real Madrid wins on the trot in emphatic style. Yesterday afternoon's Clásico, Barcelona played with intensity in a 4-0 rout against a shockingly toothless Real Madrid who looked old and slow in the midfield. It was honestly like watching Crystal Palace beat up Everton.
I was going to say, it's the same game.
It was that bad. Madrid fans, you can tell yourselves that you're so far ahead in the league that it was really just a symbol of how far Barcelona have dipped this season and that Real Madrid have bigger fish to fry right now. But what a night. What a feeling for the Catalans. None more than Aubameyang. 11 appearances for Barcelona. 9 goals. 2 here, which made him an instant club hero. He tweeted post-game, "Hello from the Finnish player." I will say, watching him nod home the opener in a Clásico is a reminder that sometimes a move can benefit both clubs and the player. And I raise my blood fam to El Clásico being a proper contest once again and Spanish football being all the better for it.
Yeah, it was a great game. Emphatic. Victory, Rog, and certainly very good, as I know Chelsea are going to play Real Madrid in the Champions League. Okay, talking of to the football, starting with the FA Cup, Middlesbrough 0, Chelsea 2. The Chelsea cruise into the semi-finals behind first half goals from Romelu Lukaku and Hakim Ziyech. Chris Wilder's Borough, who had knocked off United and Spurs earlier in the competition, showed plenty of mettle. but couldn't find a way back into this one. And while what happened on the field was relatively routine, the circumstances in which the game was played were rather surreal due to the continued fallout from Britain's sanctions on Chelsea owner and Russian oligarch Roman Abramovich and the impending sale of the club.
Oh, Chelsea entered this one with, how would you describe it? Probably with so much Sturm und Drang, which is how I imagine Tommy Tuchel comes home at night and explains it to his wife. This is how hard things have gotten for them. Sponsor, Telecom Company 3, have asked Chelsea to remove their logo from the front of the Champions League champions jerseys, but Chelsea can't afford to print new kits under the conditions of the government special license that they're operating under. Roll on, you owners, and the sale of Chelsea, the first British jewel of a super club to be sold in a decade, rumbles on at pace. Prospective bids lodged at 9 p.m. Eastern Time local last Friday night. If you're listening to this, you've missed your chance, dear listeners. In terms of potential buyers, Davo, most noise around Todd Bowley, co-owner of the LA Dodgers, who partnered with Swiss billionaire. By now, our favourite Swiss billionaire, and also the only Swiss billionaire we actually know in public, Hansjörg Weiss.
Yeah.
Opening bid said to be around $2.3 billion. Also got British Rail Estate, lad around town, Nick Candy, who's been heavily linked, having recruited Chelsea legend Gianluca Vialli into his international mixed bid, with his real estate bona fides really hinting at the desperate need for the club to redevelop Stamford Bridge, which is so old-fashioned, really doesn't compete with the likes of, say, Tottenham Hotspur Stadium, which rakes in a reported $6.5 million every game, while also hosting money-spinning Lady Gaga concerts sprinkled in. Chelsea cannot compete with that right now and need that change. Tom Ricketts, owner of the Cubs, also in there, having redeveloped Wrigley Field, like to do the same with Chelsea Stadium. Woody Johnson, my favourite of the Jets, floating around, eager to reduce another team to butt-fumble laughing stock, no doubt. British businessman Martin Broughton, once the chairman of Liverpool, has an English legend, Seb Coe, president of World Athletics, prominent former athlete and politician, in his bid. And the brokers, a Rain Group, US bank, tasked with handling the sale, is now reportedly handling negotiations, said to be whittling the bids down to three by close of business Tuesday. David, how are you feeling about all of this rumour? We're really powerless as we watch it way, way, way from the outside. This process right now, a charm offensive, you know, few people strive to say all the right things in the wooing and courting process, then do their own thing once their name is on the legal documents than prospective football club owners.
Well, look, I mean, the only positive I really could, you know, say about the whole thing is that there was a moment where I think many people wondered whether there would be any bidders for Chelsea Football Club, or whether it was just too broken, or who would really be up there. And it seems that there are plenty of bidders, plenty of people who want to get in. I'm not sure that I have the greatest faith that the combination of Rain Group and the British government, if you read any British news of the last several years about this government, it's tough to like find a lot of faith in it. But there will be a sale. I think it will move fast. And, you know, whoever buys it is going to have a series of issues. You talk about the redevelopment of Stamford Bridge. That is not simple. It is not an incredibly, you know, large piece of land over there at the end of the Fulham Road. It's just going to be very, very tough to redevelop that and turn that into anything approaching a sort of a Tottenham Hotspur Stadium.
Another potential owner whose name will not go away, the Saudi media company, the biggest media company in the Middle East, CEO
wonderful.
And Chelsea fan Mohammed Al-Kareji, said to have opened with the largest bid, $3.5 billion. Mohammed bin Salman, the crown prince of Saudi Arabia, just by coincidence, Davo, happens to appear in Al-Kareji's profile pictures on all forms of social media.
No.
But I want to be clear, Saudi media company have done their best to deny all links to the Saudi regime, no doubt also to the PIF. And I'm guessing that the Saudi in their name is just coincidentally Cockney rhyming slang for something like howdy. And that bid has led to a sizable panic, let's say, inside British football, and talk about the Premier League adding a morality clause to their fit and proper owners test. I think it used to be fit and proper owners test, like with air quotes around it. They're now, no, we must make it a fit and proper owners test, question mark. You know, you see who the Premier League, this is the problem. You see who the Premier League has already let in. And I talked about this on the WGFOP podcast last Friday. You know, the other ownership groups that might not pass a tweak version of that test. The Abu Dhabi Deputy Prime Minister of Manchester City. I know City fans don't like hearing this, but Sheikh Mansour Friday was part of an Abu Dhabi welcoming party for the Syrian despot Al-Assad, only one of Putin's greatest allies, a visit designed to, quote, normalise the Syrian president's return to diplomatic life. You got the Saudis, obviously, at Newcastle. Even the Chinese industrialist owners of Wolves, who brought that club when the Chinese government were encouraging their business leaders to lean into global football. There really is. There's a deep panic in football because the Premier League is almost paralysed between planning for the future and reflecting a past where they really weren't thinking about geopolitics, David.
Yeah, and fit is like a lot of, it's almost to find an owner to fit in with these things. You've got to find a lair somewhere with someone pretty evil to be a proper fit in the Premier League. So I don't really know. I think the process, you know, look, when was the sale of football clubs, you know, a well-run and orderly process? Are the people who are going to buy the club really going to, you know, do the best things? Are they going to be genuine custodians? You know, the alarming thing for me is sort of reading the profiles of everyone looking to buy is that they seem to be getting in there trying to buy Chelsea for investment purposes. And, you know, it's very hard to run a Premier League club like Chelsea and make a lot of money out of it. That's the reality. You have to sink a lot of money into it and you've got to have passion. Yes, there are some Chelsea season ticket holders who seem to manage a lot of assets, whatever that means, who've come in and want to get it. But it's, yeah, this is, I don't have great faith about where this is going. But Chelsea will still be around. They've been around since 1905. They'll still be around in 2105, if we're around, Roger. I don't mean you and I personally. I mean humankind. And yeah, it will go on.
The challenge for the Premier League is that all of us have no idea who may or may not quickly end up on different sides of the ever-shifting, fast-moving new allegiances in this post-Cold War meltdown. And I do believe, you know, part of me thinks this is a moment of true opportunity for football. The naive part of me, Davo, to make amends and get it right and try and readjust. You know, I will say, having been in England last week and speaking to a lot of football people, I'll say this, I did not meet a single human being in a position of power who's truly grasped the seriousness and the far-shifting nature of the problems that they are about to encounter. Football really is like a canoe hitting the rapids. This is not just a Chelsea problem. This is a much bigger problem, much more widespread, many more challenges to come. There's no evident planning. No one voiced a sense of how big the problem is, how big it's going to be. It will not go away. You know, we are witnessing a geopolitical realignment. As Warren Buffett said, you know, the tide's gone out. And so many in football right now are naked with money coming out of every orifice. Football needs help right now. Really does. I left England thinking, my God, football needs geopolitical experts who can consult, advise, and give them the kind of scenario planning, the flexible scenario planning they will need to understand what exactly we are all going to navigate. World first, football second. One other note on the sale. I've really admired the role of Chelsea Supporters Trust. I want hats off to them. You should read everything that they have been saying over the past 2 weeks. A very difficult time. They've handled themselves like Tuchel, I think, with real class over the past couple of weeks, advocating for a golden share of ownership to be given to the fans to safeguard the club's heritage. They've reportedly met with many of the prospective new owners. In comes, entering the chat, John Terry. And I'm fascinated. He's put together something called the True Blue Consortium. Unclear what it is. A £250 million deal, which would give, quote, Chelsea fans a minority stake in the club. He's trying to raise it, a large part of that, from the Chelsea fans themselves via no doubt some vaguely mass promo for Bored Ape Yacht Club and NFTs. I mean, what do you make of his re-emergence, Davo?
It's in the blockchain of all things, crypto JT. I mean, it's ridiculous. It's ridiculous. I mean, all of this, the problem is, Rog, is what you're talking about is a massive lack of governance combined with just way too much money around for lots of interested parties, and you know, uprises, you know, JT and his crypto mates to try and figure out a way to
Captain Leader Blockchain.
Yes, they're trying to like make all that money. It says you've got Scott no governance in football while FIFA and UEFA are still involved. You've got the UK government and a massive US investment bank like figuring out how to like
what could go wrong?
You know, sell this club, and just the worst.
Don't worry, Chelsea fans. I'm going to publish an NFT of my arse on the photocopier to the game itself. Oh, finally, some football. God, it's a relief to talk about bloody football. Chelsea, Michael went into this one at Middlesbrough, having scored a massive off-field own goal, a bumbling PR disaster after being blocked by the new government regulations from taking the full allocation of 4,500 tickets to take their fans up north to the Riverside Stadium. They decided to try and challenge whether Middlesbrough could have any fans in their own stadium. They said, in the name of sporting integrity, David, Chelsea and sporting integrity, it's like me opining about hair or something just like completely antithetical to me. As Middlesbrough chairman Steve Gibson said, sporting integrity and Chelsea do not belong in the same sentence for 19 years. Corrupt money has fueled their success. What on earth?
To be fair, Rog, this was a very poor translation from the original English to the English of sporting integrity. It's not what they were trying to say. They weren't meaning sporting integrity. They were meaning sporting integrity, which is a completely different thing in Chelsea speak. This was not Thomas Tuchel, we should say. He distanced himself from the comments, actually came out and said that it was a horrible idea. Whoever at the club suggested it. And, you know, fortunately it passed quite quickly, but not before there was just a lot of egg in a lot of faces.
Yeah, sporting integrity as an NFT.
Sporting integrity is my ass on a photocopier. Take that, sporting integrity. A tattoo of sporting integrity on my ass as it's on
the We take the ball in the face. Quite the stench hanging over this one then. Played before a 35,000 capacity Riverside. Middlesbrough, their team, pushing hard for promotion from the Championship under our old friend Chris Wilder. They'd already beaten Manchester United and Tottenham in earlier rounds. Wilder never wanted to miss the opportunity to piss on fallen foes in their face. Pre-game, he said, "From my viewpoint, there's not a lot of sympathy towards Thomas and the players. I don't think there's an incredible amount of sympathy for them anywhere in football." Those words would soon turn into ashes in Chris's mouth. 15 minutes in, Chelsea effortlessly broke through Borough's press. The excellent Mason Mount springing down the left arced a sweet, sweet ball to the feet, Davo, of the single most unusual and unexpected goal scorer Chelsea could have.
Romelu Lukaku, Rog, loves a cup competition. and certainly he likes a ball straight to his left foot from the wide right. That was a fantastic pass, Rog. Fantastic run. He's sneaky fast, Mason Mount. Got around, beautiful goal that went sort of, you know, like both their goals. It just went from the from their own defence all the way up to attack in just a few passes.
Big Rom scored without a celebration, nary a smile. But you've got to say, man loves an FA Cup goal, though. Third of the season and the competition for him. Borough tried to make a fist of it, but their ball into the area was never a true threat. Chelsea doubled their lead through Ziyech on his 29th birthday with a cut-in and thrash. Iron Robin tribute goal. And from that point on, the game really became one of civic pride and enjoyment for the Borough fans, celebrating their journey. And little else, Chelsea really shut the game down. Borough unable throughout the game to craft the final ball. And as turbulent and chaotic as things have been off the field for your boys, Tuchel's Chelsea, Davo, they continue to display so many admirable qualities, finding a way to maintain their focus, which is incredible. And keep on keeping on. The trust and the team spirit was impressive. That is the culture at our club, said Tuchel right after the game, really beaming, and Wembley now beckons.
Yeah, Chelsea have been playing great football through this whole period, which has been remarkable. Tuchel, this has been written elsewhere, but Tuchel has gained, you know, there were some skeptics, including yours truly, about Tuchel early on, and even after I sort of accepted he's a really good manager, still not a lot of love. This has really endeared him to Chelsea fans, how he's performed. He's been a symbol of what we do love about the club. The players seem to be fighting really hard for the shirt, and it's good to see.
Best double T in sports, apart from Texas Tech.
Okay, Rog, Southampton 1, Manchester City 4. The league leaders rebound from that 0-0 draw against Palace by battering the Saints. Raz put City ahead in the 12th minute despite the one-way traffic. The Saints did draw level via a bizarre Aymeric Laporte own goal that caught poor City keeper Zach with his Stefan showing. But in the second half, a Kev penalty, Phil Foden master blaster, and a Riyad Mahrez heat check. They saw City book their London Airbnb Wembley for a date in the semi-finals.
I watched City toil in person at Selhurst Park against Crystal Palace last Monday night. A 0-0 draw, which really felt like a savage loss by City standards. Allowing Liverpool to reel them back in must be so psychologically fraught for everyone in Manchester, especially Pep, football's finest, obsessive, compulsive control freak, a man constantly in search of perfection. And Southampton, for their part, they entered on a run of three straight league defeats, a bit like a team if you've watched them with one eye on the summer vacation already. But Hasenhüttl, he knew his team had emerged intact with two draws against City already this season. And Southampton started optimistically. They hit the post. They caused Pep in his black polo neck to go all Dieter Sprockets insane on the halfway line. Did you appreciate his look in this one, Davo? I do find it so hard to pull off a polo neck for a middle-aged dude.
You know, if he wasn't just so good at managing a football club, we would be laughing hysterically at his various outfits that he wears. But he sort of seems to pull off everything. He just looks like a genius in everything he wears.
In this one, he looked like an incredible puppeteer. And it was, maybe in a way he is, because it was Pep's anger to which his team responded. 12th minute, Jack Stevens caught on the ball. Raz Sterling pounced and punished. And what I admired, though, in this moment about Southampton, really, they were fearless. They didn't buckle. They responded, made a fist out of it. Their work rate can be, when they're on their game, so bloody impressive. And here, they kept coming and were rewarded on the stroke of halftime. Stuart Armstrong slipped in Eli Anoussi on the right of the area. We'll say our boy, Zach Steffen.
Yeah, hesitated.
He did. Two minds. Yeah. Three minds. Old four minds, whatever. He seemed frozen in response. His decision to stay or go was off, left himself cruelly exposed. And the ball clipped in off a stunned Laporte. Good God, I hope Zach gets all his clangers out of the way before Mexico on Thursday. Second half, reasonably entertaining. Southampton pressed and passed with a vigour. Really hard to sustain that for the full 90 minutes against City, right, David? That's what's so exhausting to play against this Manchester City team.
Yeah, they just keep coming at you, and eventually, you know, charged into the box and won a penalty.
And that is really what followed was so honestly cruel on them. Yeah, the penalty, really a poor decision by a tired Salisu, who chose to clip Jesus on the edge of the penalty area needlessly. KDB popped home the penalty. City then, and only then, threw on Foden and Mahrez. My God, that must be just terrifying, like seeing the cavalry enter a battle. I mean, not fair, man. Not fair. Foden delivered immediately. Some goal, David. That hit, pivot, and smash.
Yeah, he lashed it. I mean, the speed on that ball, it was like an MLB reliever coming in and like throwing 90-mile-per-hour fastballs. That was amazing.
Phil Foden, wild thing. I mean, God, a goal, but a power, vision, confidence, and technique. Mahrez casually added a banger, and Pep was fair in his post-match comments. It was difficult. Southampton are, quote, one of the most well-organised teams we played all season. They play with incredible intensity. That praise will be Southampton's last real victory of a season which is now done for them. With some positives, the play of Tino Livramento, the excellent, robust Romeo, Walker-Peters has improved a ton this season. This was really a 4-1 that didn't feel like a 4-1, one born of margins and mistakes, which City punished ruthlessly. But City march on, Davo, the hopes of a treble still burning.
Yeah, you didn't mention Hasenhüttl's waistcoat, which, you know, stole the show at various points of the afternoon.
What look do you think that was? I can't tell with him whether sometimes gentlemen who really are troubled by style go formal waistcoat when they just think that that is fancy and stylish. I'm not sure where he is on that. They go for dandy.
It's long lost uncle at a wedding, really, is what that look is.
Yeah, it's really exactly that. I can't believe he drank that much at his daughter's wedding, is how I'd file away that lot. One big note, Dave, on the BBC commentary of the game, they dropped news that still waiting to hear confirmed by a legit news source. Are you sitting down, Dave?
Yeah.
Mike Dean is said to be retiring at the end of the season.
What?
Yes.
What's he going to do?
I think he's bored of stories. I think for him, the Premier League is, I mean, what are we going to do? What are we, I don't know what, think of, what do you think about us, Mike Dean? What are we going to do with that? I think he sees the Premier League a bit as starring off Broadway. He probably at this point wants something bigger. It's not been confirmed yet, but man clearly knows you either retire a villain or you ref long enough to see yourself become the hero or something like that. I bet that before the season, Dave, if this news is true, he will fulfil his dream, his fantasy of sending off 12 players in one game and reducing
from
a
one
Premier
team.
League match. Yes, no, balancing it. It will. I bet you his dream is to reduce a Premier League game to a five-a-side match. Mike Dean pawn that.
It'll be interesting. He'll definitely be a broadcaster when he finishes. He'll be weighing in from the sideline saying there should have been way more cards given out in that half, way more cards. You'll always be able to go to Mike Dean and say, red card offence, red card offence, red card offence. Can't wait. We should get him on the show.
I think so. You know, move over Dr. Joe. You're going to have to up your rate. We're gonna have Mike Dean on every single broadcast. But God, we will miss him if this news is true. On the Premier League field. And then, so I think, I can't confirm or deny this, but I do believe Jody Mitchell wrote the lines, "Don't it always seem to go that you don't know what you've got till it's gone," when she was thinking about Mike Dean's retirement.
Maybe. Certainly one of the characters in football.
What do you mean, maybe? Definitely Jody Mitchell. Big, big, big Mike Dean fan.
Nottingham Forest 0, Liverpool 1. Another American keeper in action here, Rog, as Ethan Horvath and Forest give a really good account of themselves against the quadruple aspirants. But in the end, a 78th minute Diogo Jota goal proves too much for the Championship side, and Liverpool march on.
Cue relentless team of destiny vibes in the league. Liverpool chasing down City. Incredible 12-point gaff, is it? Worn away. Quadruple tour. Why not? Treating every single opponent like Paddy Pimblett fighting cans. Liverpool entered this one on a 9-game winning streak in the Premier League. In that run, they'd scored 23 times. Conceded just twice. Really, we think of Liverpool and it's the strikers who always grab the spotlight. But my God, the calibre of their defence, that's what wins titles. And here they took on an old foe, Nottingham Forest, coached by Steve Cooper, the man I actually wanted Everton to go out and get before Frank was chosen. A gent who early in his career had spent, I think, 5 years at Liverpool. He coached the under-12 side starting 2008 and very quickly became head of the academy and played a role in shaping the emergence of Raheem Sterling, Trent Alexander-Arnold and more. And this game had a lot of history even without him, partially because these two teams, first of all, were giants in Europe in the 1980s and also with heavy hearts. The last time they faced each other in the FA Cup almost 23 years ago on that tragic day at Hillsborough in 1989 when 97 Liverpool fans went to watch a football game and never came home. Dave-o, Nottingham Forest, to any English fan with a sense of history, this game was really an echo of Glory's past.
Yeah, I mean, it's phenomenal. Growing up, they were the team. I remember those sort of like, you know, spring evenings, you know, rushing home from school to watch Nottingham Forest play in those European competitions. They were superb. Their manager, Brian Clough, so many good players, so many epic European nights, and to watch them tumble down the pyramid, but now to be on the threshold of coming back, it's just great to see.
In those Nottingham Forest glory days when they won the predecessor to the Champions League twice, they were led by a singular, iconic, deeply mouthy coach. A bit like if Coach O and Muhammad Ali had a English bastard offspring. So just a sound machine of great quotes.
Oh, he's like a Mourinho. He's just like an English Mourinho.
I mean, just Google him, watch him on YouTube. Just a singular, remarkable human being. You may know him best in America through the Damned United, but my God, what a man of glory. And all of that was echoing through into the present. The game, feisty. Liverpool, under strength up top. Forrest, wily, disciplined, eager, confident enough to press Liverpool at times. And you saw that Liverpool's quality gave them the edge. But when they created chances, well, let's just say, Davo, I swear that when Bobby actually looks at the goal before he shoots, it's like Superman and Kryptonite. If that dude played with a blindfold, I do think if Klopp sent him out blindfolded, he'd score 25, 26 goals a season. Yeah. It's the looking that does him in.
Yeah, looking doesn't help. It may have something to do with the advanced cosmetic dentistry that he has experienced. I think the two may be related.
Oh, mate, and statisticians, there is probably a tooth-eye yeah. coordination is one of the greatest intangibles in sports. Liverpool ultimately had to throw on some of their jewels in an effort to win the game, flung on Thiago and Diaz. Forrest, credit them, had a stunning chance on the break. Johnson floated in across and Zinkenagel the chance wide of the post. Within 2 minutes, they would be punished. Tsimikas floated in a stunner of a cross. And that man, Jotes, who's honestly still playing his way back to form post-injury, there to stab it home from close range past the stranded Ethan Horvath, the pride of Highlands Ranch, Colorado. Oh, he actually had a great game with his Clint Dempsey dead eyes.
Yeah, I thought Nottingham Forest throughout, front to back, had a great game and were hard done by that goal.
Forest can take some degree of pride that they challenged Liverpool, frustrated them away. Few Premier League teams actually do. Defender Joe Worrall said post-game that we went toe-to-toe with one of the best teams in the world. As Forest continued their strong second half of the season push for the playoffs, they'll draw strength from this. It would be so bloody good to see them back in the top flight. But Liverpool rumble on. They will face Manchester City at Wembley in the FA Cup semi-final just a week after they go to the Etihad for that epic clash of civilizations in the Premier League on April the 10th. Davo, Liverpool and City, should they just play once a season in a winner-takes-all-the-trophies like a Super League of two?
Exactly. You just get a four-trophy classic. The TV rights would be cheaper for just one game. That would be great.
At Jason Mestis tweeted us, make it a best of five, and I'm in.
That's so funny. Not funny, though, Rog. Crystal Palace 4, Everton 0, less than 72 hours after the 10-man wobesgasm that lifted your mob to a vital league win over Pithcastle. The Blues come crashing back to earth at Selhurst Park. A barbershop quartet of goals from former Chelsea Academy product Mark Gerhey, Jean-Philippe Mateta, Will Zaha and old lightbulb head Will Hughes officially end Everton's hopes for silverware this season. Rog, the floor is yours.
Oh, I said not in the face. I mean, way to take good vibes and just crap all over them. Everton entered this one coming off one of the most crucial wins they've had in the past 20 years. That 99th minute, Iwobi-fueled, heroic fever dream against Newcastle, in which
I squealed when it went in. I squealed.
What noise did you make?
I just was like, woo! When that happened, I loved it.
God, I wrote about this in the newsletter on Friday. I just ran to the television and screamed at it like I know thousands of Blues around the world must have done. And then I turned around. I was watching with my second son, Bear, and God love him. I turned around. He was just sobbing, absolutely sobbing on the couch. And I said to him afterwards, what made you tear up? He just said, the stress, the relief, just the relief. And he said a deep, deep anger at the club for the sickening fear that they've and anguish that they've created in so many. I was like, oh my God, what have I done? What have I done? But that it really did. That win saw Everton, and I believe this tenacity, I talk about it a lot. Arguably, J Dubs would say probably too much on the podcast. I believe in it. And that performance was one that lived out a life truth that if you run for Evertonians, they will love you. And I spoke to Danny Higginbottom after that game, and he said, you would not have won that game with 11 men. It was ultimately that sense of injustice, Alain being cruelly sent off, which really fueled it. And I believe that it's absolutely true. And also true, and I tweeted this at the final whistle, in that moment of joy, that we would inevitably go up to London. And I argued with Steve Parrish about this in the run-up to the game. I said, we will go to Palace and we will get smacked by you. And well, you don't have to be Rojstadamus to get that one right. One of the many odd things about the Lampard regime, God bless his little broken hand, is the way Frank changes personnel and formations game on game on game. Our players are already low morale. They're already, to be honest, low skilled. And, you know, the whole reality of Everton right now screams, keep it simple, keep it repetitive. But here he went 3-4-3, which worked for a couple of minutes, mostly because Palace seemed asleep at the wheel at the start. Everton charged forward relentlessly, pressed
Everton
Palace.
Were good at the beginning.
What do we create by a couple of Richarlison being fouled moments not given? Ricky, Richarlison has almost entered that rare ether of Luis Suarez territory, Davo, where you can do anything on the field to him and the referee is not going to give it.
Yeah. But Palace couldn't get out of their own half for the first, I don't know, 15, 20 minutes. It was remarkable to watch. And then it just changed.
Yeah, peak Everton to dominate, to blow set piece after set piece and then leak from one of the first you concede in the most shocking yet predictable fashion possible. 21-year-old Mark Gerhey, that polished young centre-back, nodded home from an angle, a goal Everton have only conceded 20 times before this season. What a player he is, Davo. Captain, leader, legend in the making. Poor Frank Lampard on the sideline. Dude looks like he has aged in a way that young presidents age. You know, presidents, they always show them that they arrive with swagger and energy and leave office, normally after two terms, shattered and battered. But that's after 8 years. Lamps has been at Everton since January, and he looks about 10 years older.
Yeah, I watched the post-match press conference and he looked awful. I was worried for him.
Yes, because his team, and he cannot fathom this, he talks about it a lot. We all talk about it. We all witness it week on week. Everton concede and it's game over. They roll over like few other teams in football. It would soon be two for Palace, a flowing team goal. Mateta thrashed home. Rest was frustrating. Everton created so little hustle, you know, so little care. Made me really sad second half that we didn't just play the bloody kids. Failed the kids, failed Lewis Dobbin, who would care rather than the crap that we witnessed. Palace killed the game off with Zaha scoring kind of a Rigi goal off the bar. Ridiculous. Our defenders love to stand around and watch their team get scored on, which is a very odd way to make a living. The translucent Will Hughes, of course, got his first goal in Palace colours. And I've got to say this, credit to Palace. Such a bloody well-run club. True bolts of talented youth up and down that side. Elise, Gerhey, and their fans, best in the Premier League to me. They sing the whole game, win or lose. That energy of Selhurst Park. Davo, I would like to, you know, I do believe it's a must visit for any American fan here in London. I would love one day us to take 1,000 GFOPs together over for a weekend and go to Selhurst Park together.
Tyreek Mitchell, the other player who is like, you know, just knocking on the door of superstardom right now. Yeah, really attractive club, obviously. You know, you and I have been close to it from our relationship with Steve Parrish and everything they've done. You know, and really, there's no reason why they, you know, a few years ago, they were struggling. Remember those that opening for the season when they lost, I don't know how many straight games before they brought in Roy and steadied the ship. And they were struggling for a while, but they've turned it around fast. Patrick Vieira has been a brilliant hire. He's done a fantastic job. They actually feel a little bit, you know, feel a little bit miffed that they don't have more points. They had so many sort of last minute equalizers cancelled out or winners scored against them. It's been an amazing season at Selhurst Park, and the atmosphere there is sort of almost like nowhere else in the Premier League, certainly nowhere else in London.
For Everton, another embarrassment in a season stuffed with them. The mood goes from the exhilaration of Thursday night's victory to doom and fume. And yes, the players must have been knackered and emotionally drained after the Newcastle heroics. But this was so fundamentally, profoundly poor and so bloody predictable in equal measure to go back to earth with a bump. And Lampard Post-match, Dave, his words, there's only so much you can keep trying to butter someone up to give them confidence. We're playing at the cutthroat end of football here. This is a cup quarter final to get to Wembley, and if you haven't got the confidence to play, you can quickly flip it and say, David, these words he said about his own players, have you got the bollocks to play?
Yeah.
What on earth?
Well, brilliant. I think he's right. And that's what is happening. I think this fixture was tough. It was the early fixture, Sunday, less than 72 hours after this sort of, a 10-man victory against Newcastle. He said Alan suspended ridiculously, 3 games, not overturned. And so I think tough. But you can see from the way Everton are defending that a lot of the time, they run in front of their home fans, but they don't run when they go on the road. It's the oddest thing. It just must be. I mean, you're looking at a man who is tremendously frustrated by what he's dealing with in that dressing room.
Do you have the bollocks to play? I watched this game. I was like, we are what we are. A wretched team, bereft of leaders, an expensively assembled ball of nothing. And the only bright side of this loss is that Everton are no longer able to do a Wigan and win the FA Cup and get relegated in the same season. There's an old Jewish joke that I think of when I watch Everton, God often rereads the Bible to try and understand what's going on in this world she created. And nothing about this club makes any sense to me watching them. I think we've just got to embrace the chaos and pray. 27 now, 27, Davo. Gloomy, bloody years, dismal years mostly. I have watched Everton play game in, game out without winning a trophy. It is, I tweeted this, it is the existence, being an Evertonian, really of a sporting Sisyphus, perpetually just a cycle of yearning, of dreams, of shattered dreams, doomed hope. And I'll say I wouldn't want it any other way. It really, for many reasons, it builds character, it builds connection, it builds like the deepest memories, very profound memories. I raise this bud. And I say to all Evertonians listening, may next season be our season. And thanks to @Saruti, who tweeted a real nugget of wisdom, can't get relegated from the FA Cup.
I loved it when you sent out that tweet though, Ross, the number of people reminding you that you had won the Florida Cup, which is the silverware they can never take away from you.
Football's biggest trophy.
Yeah. It is now to the Premier League football. Rog, Aston Villa 0, Arsenal 1, a game between two of the strongest hairlines in football management. And it was Mikel Arteta's hairline that took the lead in the 30th minute when, after a free kick, Bukayo Saka just drifted around the edge of the area and pounced on a loose ball and hit it through a thicket of defenders' legs and past an unsighted Emi Martinez. From there, a really impressive mental display from the Gunners, who battened down the hatches, especially in the last half hour. Reserve keeper Bernd Leno kept the clean sheet, and Arsenal took another big step forward towards a top four finish.
God, Arsenal are not unlike the US men's national team in a perpetual fight, not just against their opponents, but a perpetual fight for respect and for self-respect. That's Arsenal coming off a stinging defeat against Liverpool midweek. You think you are a finished product. Then along comes Klopp's mob to punish your mistakes and remind you that you're still scrappy do. And so they travel to Villa, well aware that they lost their two previous visits to Birmingham. But this Villa, Stevie Gerrard's Villa, themselves coming off a languid defeat at West Ham. Stevie G won some against crap teams, barely competed against any club above Villa at kickoff. And he really is a manager in need of a signature win. So fascinating, the mix of mental questions ahead of this one, especially as Arsenal were without Martinelli. And just as importantly, the influential Aaron Ramsdale out for a few weeks with a hip injury. Minimal rest ahead of this one, early start. Could this be a pothole? And in truth, I thought this was a fantastic performance because the key players, Davo, hardly missed.
And, meanwhile, what's interesting is Aubameyang is like having the, his performance of the season in the El Clasico. And just Arsenal look like a complete squad all of a sudden. Yeah. They look superb. God. They have patterns of play that you're starting to recognize. It's sort of like a mini Man City. You're starting to look at the diagrams in the book and see, that's that Arsenal move where Saka plays the ball in and then drifts inside. I really love watching them now.
I've got to say, I hinted at this with the toast at the top of the show. I find that narrative that Arsenal fans, and I use that word loosely, like one that rhymes with Mia's Porgan, are trying to ferment. That it's just, oh, what are you doing, Arteta, you weak manager, letting Uber go? I truly believe, great for Uber, that he's motivated, spite motivated, to step up again in La Liga. Sometimes, to say it nicely, I believe that a transfer can benefit both clubs. And you watch this young team without him, and I marvel at it. I really do. Every Arsenal player looks so bloody comfortable with the ball at their feet, so bloody confident the way they zip that ball around. To me, it's an absolute delight to watch them. And on the half hour mark, they took a deserved lead. Saka, who had the crap kicked out of him all game long, spanked a low drive through so much traffic that Emi Martinez will barely have seen the shot till he was picking it out the back of the net. And Villa struggled to muster really much interest in scoring. With this team right now, you shut down Coutinho and their threat is totally minimised. They only summoned a shot on target down the stretch with Ings on, flickering into life. Arsenal's backline deserves credit for their collective commitment and organisation. Dave, I said those words, collective commitment and organisation in connection to Arsenal. Toughness, resilience. You wouldn't have said that. I mean, those words, they almost seem oxymoronic for Arsenal in the last 5 years, but they are real, right?
Yeah, and I think that's the more impressive thing that Mikel Arteta has done with this team. And it's sort of in its own image as a you know, the player he was as well. Yes, they're offensively purring, but it's really that solidity at the back. Arsenal have offensively purred for years. They've had phases where they've done that. But the fact that they're so solid at the back now, they tackle hard in midfield, they run and run and run and run when they're defending off the ball, not just on the ball. I think that's why they're so improved.
Villa. Oh, Stevie Gerrard smarted. Remarkable. Watch it if you've not seen it. His post-match, really, it's just deep, deep unmasked irritation. When interviewed by Des Kelly in that post-match questioning, where the broadcaster pointed out that he is lost now to the big team, City, Liverpool, Chelsea, and now Arsenal, and that's the gap they're trying to close. They're struggling to close the gap, even with their prodigious spending in January. You could tell from the interview, and I used to interview Stevie G a lot as a player. Stevie Gerrard, the player, was never used to being disrespected in the way Stephen Gerrard, the manager, will be after performances like this one. At William of VB tweeted, Villa fighting hard to be champions of the bottom 10, Davo. I mean, Stevie G, how did you understand that?
You know, it's exactly what you just said, that, you know, these, you know, players just aren't used to it when they become managers, because no one challenges them or they can deflect things so easily. They're never going to turn up and give an interview after a tough loss, or very, very rarely in their career, or only if they've had an outstanding game themselves and their team have lost. So this is tough for him. Look, it's difficult coming in mid-season. He hasn't really had time to work with the squad, work with the players. He obviously had a great transfer window bringing in Coutinho. But you're right. Genius. Teams are now adjusted to that and are stopping him from playing, and therefore sort of controlling the sort of, you know, offensive midfield. And it's going to be hard, but we'll see. Just like you said, of, you know, Aubameyang going off and making it when challenged. Just, you know, I watched Tammy Abraham play this weekend. Another player who's gone abroad and after getting discarded by Chelsea and 21 goals in Italy this season, been remarkable. We'll see if Steven Gerrard can now sort of really step up. He had success early on at Rangers, and we'll really have to see what he's able to do now.
I really thought you'd ask more better questions, Des. Oh, Arsenal, what a way to rebound from the disappointment of the Liverpool loss. 10 wins in their last 13 games. Watching their players drop to their knees and celebrate victory at the final whistle, really a reflection of the size of the task they're currently engaged in. Not just qualifying for Champions League again, but really exercising ghosts of failure recent, which have haunted them. And it was magnificent to watch for me. Just as Liverpool are incredible to watch from the POV of a super team, a team that have done it without limitless funds. To me, in that context, Arsenal are really incredible to watch if you are, say, a United fan, a team who are a true collective, rebuilding and doing it rooted in youth and a real sense of cohesive collective play. One last note, two things I love post-match. Ramsdale in his street clothes, hugging his replacement Bernd Leno in the moment of victory. Think about that from a collective spirit standpoint. And Saka taking a lap of honour towards the Arsenal away fans, hugging and being hugged. What a year he's had, Davo, a teenager during the Euros over the summer, a recipient of racist hate after his Euro final penalty miss, only to rebound like this to lift the team and deliver the kind of wonder that fans have long ached for. It must feel magnificent.
Yeah, what a player. And doing it from, you know, a sort of a wing-back position. Just phenomenal how often he gets involved in goals, both in terms of, you know, assists and finishing. And he's a sneaky good finisher as well. He puts his laces through the ball and he just scores some great goals. I think that's 10 in all competitions for the young man who, as he said, has bounced back so well.
As we pod, Davo, breaking news now confirmed by legit sources. Referee Mike Dean to quit at the end of the season.
Wow.
Our old friend GFOP at that Josh Kale says, oh, Mike Dean's farewell tour going to be up there with Coach K's.
I hope it's more successful. Tottenham 3, West Ham 1. A masterclass from North London Calvin Hobbs, Sonny and Harry Kane. It started in the 9th minute when HK10's pullback caromed in off Kurt Zouma for an own goal. Just 15 minutes later, it was Kane again, this time dropping deep and playing a diagonal ball into the path of a straight sun run for the South Korean to finish emphatically. Saeed Benrahma pulled one back for the Irons, but with the game winding down, Hugo Lloris went rat one to number 10, who went old school number 9, flicking a header into the path of Sonny, who blasted home his second of the game. Antonio Conte's mob are lurking, clutching their Powerade, just 3 points behind Arsenal, having played one more game.
Erratic Kings. Tottenham enter this one. Last 8 results, loss, win, loss, win, loss, win, loss, win. Could they break the poetry of that symmetry? West Ham, footballing Chumbawambas. They get knocked down. They get back up again. First attack of the game. First goal, 9th minute. Kane charged down the right. Tried to find his Korean goal twin. But Kurt Zouma, marking him, turned it into his own net. Cat killer karma. Incredibly, Spurs 10th own goal of the season, and it would soon be 2, a scrumptious goal. Spurs really at their best. Kane with his trademark ball from deep to spring the charging Sonny, still had so much to do, cut inside, found an angle, lashing it home. Kane, Sonny, own goal. Davo, Spurs 3 biggest threats showing up right and early in this one.
Yeah, no, it was a great move, and Tottenham playing with sort of incisive energy, and West Ham just looking, you know, just a little lost. They're certainly a little erratic towards the end of the season, Rog.
Yeah, tired, worn down. Oh, the game. Well, really, neither team were at their best in the second half. West Ham definitely fatigued by their Europa League extra time heroics against Sevilla. I loved watching Spurs' new cult hero, Kulusevski, who along with Betancur really lifted the team in this second half of the campaign. And I texted Rebecca Lowe, hoping that she would fit this into her broadcast. I love Spurs fans' new ABBA-based chant. Gimme, 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 a ginger from Sweden. He came from Juventus and he plays on the wing. Both teams soiled their chances through a cumbersome second half. But at the death, Spurs sealed the win. Again, Kane clicking on a long Lloris kick. So rattled were West Ham that both centre backs went to cover Harry, leaving him to simply flick the ball onto Sonny, like Stafford to Cooper Cup. And you know the rest. West Ham's top 4 chances now seem far-fetched. And you do wonder how long David Moyes will keep playing his best players in league games and instead focus on that darling Europa League run. I am rooting for David Moyes to experience European glory. Spurs experienced successive league wins for the first time since early December. Their outside dreams of a top 4 finish live on. Yeah. They leap above Man United into 5th place, 3 points behind dread rival Gunners, who have that precious game in hand. Do you think Antonio Conte was in the lazy boy at full time, Davo, in the locker room?
He could have been. He could have been.
Just relax, guys. Puff on this.
Too much. Leicester 2, Brentford 1, a collection of goals that should be hung in a museum, every single one a banger, or at least above Brodge's mantle next to the mural of Brodge Banger. Leicester went ahead via a Belgian laser from Timothy Castagna and a sumptuous James Maddison free kick. Woof. Both in the first half. Brian Bumo pulled one back in the 85th minute. Another cracking goal. But in the end, the Foxes hold on to sneak into the top half of the table. Brentford, meanwhile, stay 8 points clear of relegation.
Three sizzling goals, including that James Maddison free kick that was as handsome as what Brodge imagines he sees when he looks in the mirror. Leicester maintain the perfect record against newly promoted teams. 4 games, 4 wins. They're almost like an inverse Everton. And the sun starting to peek out of the dark recent clouds as Brodge prepares for the clash with PSV Eindhoven in the quarterfinal of the Europa Conference League, which Brodge probably pronounces as the Europa Conference League. Trying to big it up in his own imagination. Brentford, really the loveliest news of the week, a story that continues to warm the cockles of my heart. Brentford midfielder Christian Eriksen was called up last week for the Denmark squad. 9 months. It really is, Dave, after suffering that cardiac arrest on the field. My goal is to play in the World Cup, he said. I want to play. That has been my mindset all along. What a hero. And talking of heroes.
Oh, yeah, here we go. This is the one. Wolves 2, Leeds United 3. Jesse Marsh-Stambul, after going down 2-0 in the first half to goals from Johnny and Francisco Trincao, Leeds stormed back. The comeback began after Raul Jimenez was rather harshly sent off for a second yellow in the 53rd minute. From there, the Yorkshiremen pounced. Jack Harrison started the comeback by throwing down a putback dunk in the 63rd minute.
Good
just 3 minutes later, Rodrigo levelled things up, capitalising on some woeful Wolves defending with a scrappy strike. And in the 91st minute, that Lambeth-born man bun in football boots, Luke Ayling, hammered home from close range to scoop a crucial 3 points in Leeds' bid to stay above the Premier League waterline. They're now 7 points clear of the drop, Rog.
I cried.
Oh.
I cried. It was like watching a goal movie in real life. What a magnificent game of chaos and anger, heroics and crappy cartwheels. Leeds, it's comeback season as Jesse Marsh continues his one-man fight to avoid the modern American remake of Damned United. His team began optimistically, only to see Patrick Bamford limp off in agony, injured again, inside 23 minutes, tears streaming down his face. Oh, God, to grind your way through rehab, only to suffer another injury, so bloody cruel. And it looked like Leeds' belief really exited with him, because within minutes, Wolves took the lead, Johnny sweeping home, and Leeds' misery just reinforced. They suffered injury after injury, Llorente and Click limping off. It's just a flesh wound, leaving themselves vulnerable every time Wolves attack. The defensive organisation just completely evaporated. Chaos ensued. And when Trincao slapped home a second goal after a quick free kick, which seemed to utterly misdirect every single Leeds player who appeared to have never seen or heard of an aforementioned quick free kick before, it did feel like game over, right, Davo? And I felt for Jesse Marsh in that moment. The tone of the commentary really began to bury him.
Yeah, began to bury him, began to bury the side, called it all over, but they've not watched a lot of Premier League football, Rog.
The game turned. First on the red card, controversial perhaps, not for me, Raul Jimenez, second yellow right after half-time for clattering into goalkeeper. But then the real Marsh madness ensued. 2 goals inside 2 minutes 54 seconds. First, our mate Jack Harrison, elite football, even elite a haircut, slapped home. Rodrigo smashed in an equaliser from an angle, a comeback which was captured poetically by Peter Drury, what a commentator he has become, after racing Wisconsin's Jesse Marsh. Let's just give him his full name. He'd watch his lead score twice within 214 seconds. Peter Drury said, at halftime, he looked as if he was drowning. Now he looks like he's walking on water. What did you make of it?
Yeah, that's a good line. It was almost Bielsa-like, the way that Leeds like threw themselves into this contest and got back into this game. Every single goal was chaos. It was chaos. And at the end of it, the ball was in the Wolves' net.
Yes, Jesse Marsh unleashed all those goldfish, those Believe posters, American glory, some enormous misses, it should be said, down the stretch. Daniel James might just be the most non-American US men's national team S player in world football. Just a raw product, blessed with undeniable pace, but never quite confident enough to score consistently. But then, in the 91st minute, Luke Ayling kept alive some post-free kickbox slop, lashed home, then reeled away, tumbling like an English Simone Biles. Later said it was a Robbie Keane tribute, but proper leads, David, to score a goal that may be heralded as a turning point in your team's fight against relegation. And that's the celebration that you unfurl.
Yeah, and he also backed away all of his teammates in order to do that celebration. So clearly he had rehearsed it before he did it in the game.
God, I was so unbelievably joyous. Really a mix of relief and wonder. Jesse Marsh, only the second American ball manager to coach in the Premier League. His leads, two goals down, yet some in victory. And I will say, many in English football tried to bury him, really before he had a chance. You know, echoes of Bob Bradley. And Jesse's now savoured back-to-back victories for the second time in 6 days. His Leeds scored a stoppage time winner. And this time last week, Leeds were 2 points above relegation. The gap is now 7 points. Even, you know, I think they've played like 27 or 28 games more than all those around them, give or take. Haters will say that the sending off gifted the win. But I've got to say, we've got to remember, Wolves, this is the first time they have conceded 3 goals all season. That's an achievement. This is the second time they've given up a 2-goal lead since they returned to the Premier League. This is Wolves. Well, let's just say their European ambitions now seem to be slipping. They've lost 4 of their last 6 league games. I thought this was a magnificent victory. And I was really struck in Marsh's post-game press conference. Manager asked by a journalist about how his players have received. And he quipped, "From day one, they accepted me. None of the players have made fun of my accent like some of you." Cue a long, awkward solo chuckle. If you've not seen it, look at it on our Instagram. What did he make it? I mean, the English press, Pat, they just iced him. They met it with a total silence. David, if Mourinho or Conte cracks a joke, don't the press crack up as if they're at a George Carlin live show?
Well, I think men Conte does, not necessarily when Mourinho does. He got into a very standoff relationship with the press towards the end of his many runs at English football clubs. It was a moment. What I saw was a man, I think what you wrote was brilliant. It's a room full of Trent Grimms, and that was just, it's so true. But it's I saw a man with just incredible.
Trent Grimm, independent.
I saw a man with incredible confidence and confidence in his own ability and a little bit of shoving it all in their faces. And I loved it. The reality is that Leeds are playing much better football, even in their losses, than they were under, Marcelo Bielsa, who's a legend at Leeds. And he's got them playing better football, and therefore he's getting results. This one may have been a little fortunate, but they were unfortunate, in that first match he lost 1-0. So I think he deserved it.
Even though Leeds are in a relegation battle with my beloved, beautiful Everton Football Club, I will say I live and die with Jesse's fortunes. Men's coaching remains the last backwater of the American game. It used to be, I'm going to write about this in my newsletter today, it used to be that the men's players were also part of that backwater, but that myth has been shattered. And so men's coaching is really the last backwater. And so Marsh's failures will be magnified until he eradicates them. His successes also will be attributed to his predecessor, Bielsa, who remains a demigod. There's one tweet at the final whistle at TalkSport Drive who wrote, "That was mad. It had Bielsa's fingerprints all over it." And I read that and I really see Jesse cannot win. All he can do is keep on keeping on, defying expectations and being his authentic self. There's really no arguments that Marsh can engage in to win respect, right, Dave? All he can do is just be his authentic self.
Yeah, just got to keep on winning and having his team perform. And he's not going to win them all. He's still in a relegation fight. I mean, it's still going to be tight at the bottom because I think one of those teams in the bottom three is going to start winning some games and making everyone sweat ahead of them. But, he's started, I think, really impressively.
All Jesse can do is just keep believing, as he does in the power of the collective, in his post-game huddles, in the power of the underdog. And in that regard, I love the self-awareness and the defiance of his final words Friday night. He said, "I like being the underdog. I like having to fight for things. I like not taking anything for granted. I like having my back against the wall." Godspeed, Jesse Marsh, you beauty.
Okay, Rog, can we get one final toast with that exclamation point in a bottle, Jägermeister, to bring us home?
Yes, what a raise. This Jägermeister, this bolt of human emotion in a shot glass to our baby Eagle US men's national team. As they enter crunch time, it's the final week of World Cup qualifying, CONCACAF styly, with their fate in their own hands, but without Weston McKennie, Serginho Dest, Matt Turner, Chris Richards all out with injury, and Brendan Aaronson's status a mystery uncertainty. He was pulled out with a knock ahead of yesterday's Salzburg game. Side quest. Question, Devo, how many US players need to drop out before I get the call up that I've long dreamt of? Think about that as our US boys descend in, or ascend or descend or ascend into the Azteca Thursday night, Mexico. Oh, followed by a home game against Panama in your spiritual hometown of Orlando. And then they finish off qualifying in Costa Rica. We need 5 bloody points from those 3 games and we are in. We got the trauma a failure in Trinidad and Tobago 2017 hanging over us. We got the injuries. I'm not going to lie, they are debilitating. I do love US soccer Twitter. There's always like an element of no matter what is happening to this team, of just insane blind confidence. Injuries don't matter. We got Gio Reyna back. To me, I look at it, we've got a young and experienced squad. This is where a coach has to step up and show he can lead. This is a big chance for Triple G, Greg Berhalter, who still needs to truly convince to step up and seize this moment to expunge the doubts and fears born of Cuva, prove that respect is built on more than just Starbucks, being there, city mugs and 3 sneakers to US glory and courage, David.
You missed out the behind-the-back bounce passes, Rog. You missed out the interesting sneakers, all the other things that he brings to the job. By the way, you didn't pause to allow me to answer the question on how many US players would have to drop out before you got the call.
How many, really?
It would have to be hundreds of thousands of players, Rog, maybe tens. You're not, you know, take you back 25 years when you were of football-playing age, maybe. Maybe. I've seen you've got some skills. You can drop the shoulder. You can,
good for a reducer. You can,
yeah,
or two.
Exactly. But now,
by the
Rog,
way, I'll bite
really
your arm off for that. What you've just said is not dispiriting. Like, you actually, less player. If you've got me just hundreds of thousands, if I'm in the hundreds and thousands and not the millions, Dave, you've got me further ahead in the queue than I've got myself. It's motivating.
I'm also being nice to you with considering Everton's predicament right now. A reminder, Rog, about all of our US men's national team content coming up in the next few days. An Alfonso Herrera pod special presented by Camarena Tequila drops tomorrow, Wednesday.
Oh, your favourite tequila, right?
Oh, I love my Camarena. I love my 3 limes. Love it all. 40% alcohol by volume, Rog. Wednesday.
One lime for each G.
Yeah, you do it live with Hercules Gomez at noon Eastern time on Spotify Green Room. And we're back on Green Room pre and post game Thursday.
Yes.
Do not miss a second of it. GFOPs. Okay, you can follow us on Twitter at Men in Blazers, at Embassy Davis, at Rog Bennett on Instagram, at Men in Blazers, at Embassy Davis on Facebook. We're the Men in Blazers on YouTube, our YouTube channel, Rog. It's excellent. Spent some time on that yesterday. YouTube.com. Just search for Men in Blazers. Twitch with twitch.tv/Men in Blazers. You can always send your ravens to the crap part of Soho. You can always email us at meninblazers@gmail.com. Vendorpunk, Rog.
War pig!
Was that a Rabona?
I like snacks.
Boards win, boards win.
Take that, Gloria.
Boards lose.
To Tweed.
Abrigado, rock on, mate.
Kung Fu Fighting America. Love you, Davo.
Love you, Rog.
Love you, baby eagles. Courage. Hey, Prime members. You can listen to Men in Blazers ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
If you travel, you know how to pull off a perfect getaway. You know after you enroll with your Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express card, you get up to $10 back monthly on U.S. rideshare purchases with select providers, like a car to the airport. You know which remote retreats have the best herbal baths and where the Wi-Fi password is rarely used. Because you're the escape artist. It's why you're a Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express card member. If you travel, you know. Terms apply. Purchases must be on card. Visit go.amex/you know.